Dogcast Radio. If you like dogs, wherever you are in the world, we're the show for you. Hello, and welcome to episode 60 of Dogcast Radio. In this show, we talk to trainer Pam Dennison.
That's why his book is called Bringing Light to Shadow, Story of a Recovering Aggressive Dog. Not recovered, but recovering, because, yeah, the propensity is always there.
We have the Dogcast Radio news.
On the subject of children, Australian dogs are benefiting from technology developed for children.
Bernard Cartwright reads an extract from his book, The Knock Nobbler.
A large, black, hairy dog would sit on the pavement all day for hours and hours and do nothing except stare at a house.
And I'll have some general dog-related items of interest for you, including this.
When I wrote 50 Secrets Humans Should Know, I found I was on a voyage of discovery that had started as a toddler with my first puppy.
And this.
My dog is free. My dog is free.
In honour of Uno, the winner of the Westminster Dog Show being a beagle, our quotes between features are all from that famous beagle, Snoopy. But before all that, veterinarian Paula Terrify is passionate about helping dog owners give their dog the best life and health care that they can. She's given us some very useful information before about vaccinations. Today, Paula solves a listener's problem and talks about the food you should be giving your dog.
Diet is a huge part of their
Julie,
health, isn't
it? Julie, it's the number one. Mm. You simply cannot yourself be healthy or your dog be healthy in an improper diet. In fact, I really won't work with anybody in my practice that will not be willing to make changes to the dog's diet, because I can't do my job as a doctor. I can't make it that well. If I'm fighting a poor diet, it doesn't matter what drugs I give the dog or anything else that I do, if I can't get that dog on a better diet and get people to understand the importance of that.
Now, you've started your own company, haven't you? Doggy Bag.
Yes, I did.
Can you tell us?
Because I'm a crazy person.
So how did that come about?
Well, that was inspired by my own experience with my dog, Rose. About 9 years ago, I adopted a white boxer puppy. And for the first time in my life, I had a dog with constant diarrhea.
Oh, dear.
I'm like, what is going on with this dog? I mean, I'm talking to squirts, bad stuff.
Yeah.
Not only that, she wasn't even gaining weight. I got really worried about my dog. And again, that always sends me into research, doing research. And right around the time, believe it or not, I came across a book that one of my professors from veterinary school wrote, and he was a professor of gastroenterology.
Hmm.
And he wrote a book that literally changed my life, or how I practice, I should say, changed my dog's life.
Yeah.
And made mine better, too, of course. But he wrote a book about how to prepare homemade diets for dogs and cats. He called it The Healthy Alternative. And it was just amazing to read this book because he's an esteemed professor. I had a lot of respect for this man in veterinary school. And he retired and wrote the book. And the reason he had to wait till he retired was because of what he exposed in the pet food industry. And these were companies that, at the time, funded a lot of his research with grants.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a little it gets political. So when he wrote that book, I mean, I literally couldn't believe what I was reading.
Yeah.
And, of course, I had a lot of respect for him. So he certainly showed me another way to go and expelled the myth that pet food's a healthy diet, which is what we were really kind of told in veterinary school. I was a student. But you got to understand that doctors and veterinarians pretty much don't get a lot of training in nutrition. We just sort of get whatever in veterinary school, we have a lot of symposiums and things that get sponsored by the pet food industry. And so we get brainwashed right along with all the dog owners out there. Seriously, it's true.
It's true.
Processed pet food is not a healthy diet. You can do much better than that. So when he came up with getting the, he wrote a book that did two things. He made us understand what the pet food industry was all about, really what was in the pet food, how it made our pets sick. And then he wrote the second half of the book with all kinds of recipes that people could cook if their dog indeed was ill. If your dog had pancreatitis or had kidney failure or had food allergies, he gave sample recipes for dogs and cats. And so exactly what did I start doing? Started cooking for my dog. And my dog got better. It was amazing. The drugs that I was giving my dog and the prescription diets I was giving my dog, they were just Band-Aids. What was really wrong is my dog has to eat whole foods. She has to eat cooked chicken, which she loves, and fish, and just food in its natural state, because processed food has a lot of additives in it and other things that your dog can react to. People have a hard time reading pet food labels to know what's really in that stuff. And so I started cooking for my dog. And as I did that, I got kind of creative, made some interesting recipes for her, and I started bringing it to the clinic where I work and sharing it with my clients, because I wanted them to share with them the knowledge I had and the power to make changes in their dog's life. And I wanted to make it easy for them. So I thought, if they see that I'm cooking, well, then I can certainly get them to cook. And as I brought these meals to the hospital, they wanted to start buying them. So I started a company about 3 years ago called The Doggy Bag. And because, look, I thought, that's a perfect name for it. You know, we intuitively know we want to feed our dogs what we eat. We want to go out for a nice meal and bring them back something. And that's okay, provided you're not bringing them back, you know, greasy ribs, you know, and things like that. We certainly can cook for our dogs. It's really not a novel idea. It's what we used to do many years ago before the pet food industry got so popular and convenient. We did cook for our dogs. They did eat what we did. There wasn't a pet food company 60 years ago. We didn't have anything like that. So it simply went back to basics. If you just go back to basics. So people can easily prepare home-cooked diets. I tell them how to do that in my second book. I also give them some alternatives to, if they are going to buy commercial pet food, how to find the best ones. And then I talk about the raw food diet, because I've had a lot of success with feeding my dog. Also, she now gets a raw food diet, a commercially prepared one, because I really don't want to go through the hassle of doing my own raw food diet, but people are doing that. And if you do it right, it can be a very good way to feed the dog.
Yeah, yeah. Now, do you think this would be a good point to discuss Lucy's problem?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, okay.
Could you read me that question again?
Yes, I will do. Lucy wrote to us with a problem with her dog. And she said she was really interested in the article about raw feeding your dog. But this is her problem. My dog is full of energy and finds it hard to keep weight on. She's on a good quality dry food, but it obviously makes sense to feed her what she would eat naturally. I have tried everything to get her to eat raw and even partially cooked food, and she just won't touch it. As I say, I'm worried about letting her go too long without food, as she can get really underweight very quickly. And she says, has anyone got any ideas on how to break her of her junk food diet and get her eating proper stuff?
Well, you have to find out what she likes. I have yet to find a dog that did not really prefer cooked food over kibble. So she's, first of all, an unusual dog. I certainly wouldn't take the dry food away from her, but I would be a little. I would experiment with what she likes. What I have found most dogs like the most is cooked chicken. Now, since she's underweight, you can use a little chicken fat with that. So I would bake a chicken. Some people are boiling chicken. I don't think that's a good idea. Boiling chicken kind of takes a lot of the flavor out of it. So I would have her bake a chicken in the oven at 350 for 1 hour, pull off the white and the dark meat, because the dark meat has more fat and flavor in it, and use a little of the chicken skin, a little of the fat, not much, just a little, for some flavor. And make sure she's feeding it at room temperature or a little bit warm, certainly not cold. You don't want to feed them cold food. So I would have her start with that. And then the other thing to experiment with is some eggs, maybe cooked with a little bit of butter. A little bit of butter is okay.
Mm-hmm.
So cook some eggs. The other thing that dogs like, I don't know if she's tried this, is cottage cheese. A lot of dogs like cottage cheese. Just pull it right out of the can or the container. And then there's fish. You would be surprised what might happen if she opened up a can of tuna fish. So again, she didn't tell me what she was feeding. She didn't tell me what her dog was rejecting. So I don't know how far she's gone with different foods. But she needs to be a little persistent. And if your dog does like dry food, then she needs to find the best dry foods out there. The ones that contain the most protein and wholesome foods. In other words, when you read the label, the first 2 to 3 ingredients should be protein, and they should be the name of the animal. It should say something like chicken, turkey. It shouldn't say turkey meal, chicken meal. It should never say byproducts, cross it off your list. And so if it does say turkey and chicken are the first 2 ingredients, that's mostly what's in there, because the first 3 ingredients on the label makes up about 90% of what that food is.
Yeah, yeah. It's interesting what you were saying about the food to try her with, because, I mean, in a way, your dog can lead you, because there are certain things when we get them out to eat, our dogs are clearly saying to us, that smells great, can I try that, can I? And one of the things, I mean, I have to say, I'm vegetarian, so I don't personally eat meat, but one of the things that our dogs will really sort of be sitting there going, oh, let me just try that, is eggs.
Eggs? Oh, eggs are a complete source of protein for the dog. They have every amino acid in there. And this is what saddens me the most. Our dogs have been begging for food since when I was a kid, I remember it. And this whole idea that you can't feed your dog people food is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard in my life, because what is people food?
Yeah.
Food is food. What ends up in the pet food industry is the stuff that's pretty much not good enough for people, so we feed it to the dogs. So I always say, no, chicken is chicken. Go to Ralph's and get your dog a chicken versus the chicken that ends up processed into pet foods. There's no logical argument why our dogs can't eat what we eat, but we have to have some common sense about it. I don't mean to endorse things that people eat, like hot dogs. French fries, okay? These aren't the things. We're talking about whole cuts of meat, you know, and lean meats, lean beef, chicken, turkey, fish, those sorts of things. And then there's our favorite, the egg, and cottage cheese.
That sounds...
These are all things, and I just tell people, make changes slowly. If your dog's been used to eating processed food its whole life, it's going to need some time to adjust to getting some real food. So don't phone me up in a week and tell me your dog's kind of got loose poop. Your dog needs to make some major adjustments to changes in diet. Just go slow. Be sure to add maybe 1 new food every 2 weeks. Don't one day give him eggs. Now one day you're going to give him chicken, and then tomorrow he's going to get beef. I mean, that's a lot of... I say start with poultry. I have found that most dogs, poultry seems to agree with a lot of dogs. So you start with poultry. And then after that, you bring in the other things, like the egg, like the fish. And then, you know, cottage cheese is always good, because it's very easy for dogs to digest cottage cheese.
Yeah, yeah. I guess one of the things that, you know, as soon as you start saying, try this, try that, you know, one of the things that immediately that would occur to me is, you know, if I go and buy the kibble, I get the nice, easy measuring cup, and I can just dip it in and know that the dog's getting the amount of recommended food. So I guess that's one of the problems. How do we know how much, you know, just, as you say, people, in inverted commas, food, how do we know how much to give them? We have to start making judgments then, don't we? And you know, looking
right, you have to have some guidelines. All you need are guidelines. First of all, I don't think that there's any pet food out there that is actually balanced and nutritious. That's another thing you guys have been sold. And I talk a lot about the AFCO guidelines, how they're formulated, why I don't believe in AFCO guidelines, as a healthy diet. AFCO does, well, we won't get into that. We don't have a lot of time. But again, I go into that in my book. So I challenge AFCO. I really do. I take them to task. I say, look, Julie, make it really simple. What do you eat? Are you buying some bag of kibble or something that says on a label that this is what humans need to eat every day from the time they're puppies to the time they're old, and just give them the same, and just eat the same thing every day? Is that a balanced diet for anybody?
No, it's not.
It just sounds good. We've heard it for so long. This is a balanced, nutritious diet for your dog. And I say it's not. Because first of all, how do we know what your dog needs to eat every day? You know, there's a lot of variability in our own biochemistry. In other words, dogs can become nutrient deficient eating these diets, and they do become nutrient deficient over time because they need different things that aren't in that diet. That is just an estimated best guess as what dogs need, and they're based on mathematical minimums. In other words, when they came out with how much vitamin D, how much vitamin A, they simply did some feeding trials, and if the dogs didn't produce any nutritional deficiencies after 6 months of eating the food, they passed it. I mean, that doesn't tell it's nutritionally complete, because sometimes dogs will eat that food for a year or more and develop nutritional deficiencies. So we simply don't know how much of any particular vitamin or mineral our dogs really need. And we can't know that, and we can't know it for ourselves. So you go back to, what is the basic tenet of nutrition? Nutrition is, eat a variety of wholesome, fresh foods.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it is. Eat variety, eat wholesome, and eat fresh. Well, first of all, pet food's not fresh. There's nothing fresh in it. It's processed, cooked food. And when you process and cook food at high temperatures like you have to come up with these kibble and canned food diets, you lose a lot of nutrients right there. A, it's not fresh because sitting in a can or bag months before you buy it. And wholesome ingredients, I don't believe that they have wholesome ingredients. There are some companies that have better ingredients than other companies, which is why I teach people to read labels.
Mm.
But don't be sold on the idea that this is good nutrition. Yeah, a lot of dogs can eat it. A lot of dogs will get by on it. But it's not optimal, in my opinion, because it violates basic hallmarks of nutrition. There's no variety feeding your dog the same food every day. It's not fresh, and the ingredients are not always wholesome. So if you are going to feed kibble diets, I do teach people how to read labels, and I do say, look, vary the kibble. Don't feed the same kibble. Rotate your kibble to a different manufacturer every 2 to 3 months with a different blend of ingredients. At least you're giving your dog some variety.
Yeah.
And when you give variety, you give the body the ability to pull out what it wants in terms of vitamins and minerals. So let the body sort of do its own little selection process. And then it's very simple to do what I call the 50-50 diet. If I just try to get people to make a little move, I say, look, okay, get a better quality kibble. Would you think about doing this? How about giving one meal, particularly morning when everybody's rushed and they're trying to get off to work, give your dog the measured amount of kibble. But when you get home at night, could you share some chicken with your dog or scramble a couple of eggs or pull out some cottage cheese or open a can of tuna fish? Could you do that?
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's one way to start introducing some fresh foods into your dog's diet, and you don't have to go cold turkey. You're not going to hurt your dog, in my opinion. You're not going to really upset the whole balance of things if you do the 50-50 diet, where it's half what the dog's used to eating and half something new. And you can do that for a while. I mean, the thing to do, and then even if you don't do that every day, the idea is to make some change if that's all your dog's been getting is a processed kibble or canned, then you need to make some kind of a change to give your dog something fresh and wholesome.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's, again, I don't cook much. Other than my company, I use my company meals for my dogs. But my dogs, because I'm busy too, I go with these. I have a roll of raw meat patties. A company called Nature's Variety makes a very good organic meat patty. And they have I use their poultry, although they have beef and other proteins. You just keep the stuff frozen in your freezer. You pull it out every night before you go to bed, take out the number of patties you want for the following day, put it in your refrigerator, and overnight it defrosts. And in the morning, I just tear out a patty and my dogs eat it cold right out of the refrigerator. They love it. So that's another way to give some fresh food, because fresh food means it's not cooked. Cooking does destroy enzymes, makes it harder for our dogs to digest the food. Our dogs are really were evolved to eat raw food, and that's true. So the other thing you can do to help these poor dogs along is to add some digestive enzymes to their food, plant-based digestive enzymes, because that at least helps them digest these sometimes hard-to-digest commercial diets. Especially as dogs get older. I have seen this throughout my career. Dogs, that as they start to age, they just don't do well on these processed foods, which makes a lot of sense because their bodies have been taxed trying to deal with a commercially made product, eating the same food all the time. And even older people, you know, you lose your digestive abilities. You don't function as well. It's harder to make the enzymes that you need if your food doesn't have enzymes. So as they digest these foods less well, they absorb fewer nutrients, the hair coat starts to change, their weight changes, they don't want to eat these foods anymore. So the older dogs kind of come back to life when you get them off these foods and start offering them some real food.
Yeah, yeah. I suppose when you've seen these principles actually work and change dogs' lives, that's when that's where the motivation comes to say, I want people to know about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, that's the advantage that you know, the average dog doesn't have that advantage. You guys are just seeing your own dogs all the time. Well, I get to see dozens of dogs every week. And so I get the feedback.
Yeah.
And it's very rewarding to have people come back and say how well their dog is doing. And I didn't have to put the dog on any drugs or medications. I simply worked with the people for a while, and it takes some time. I mean, there's a thing called balance over time. You don't have to get this perfect the first time you venture out. You just don't be afraid to do it. I say you really can't screw it up. You're not going to kill your dog by giving it some cooked food. However, we certainly know that the pet food industry has killed lots of dogs and cats.
Mm.
So how can you do any worse than that?
Yeah.
You can't.
No.
Don't be afraid to make some sort of change. Your dog will give you the appropriate feedback. And then you'll have the motivation to want to make more change. But the idea is to just do something. You know, we're always this change. But but when your dog looks at you and wants to eat, I mean, that's gratifying.
Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
It is for me anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Now, we'll have some links on the site, on the Dogcast site. But where can people go to find out, you know, to carry on exploring this?
Okay, well, it's called 30 Min Vet Consult, 30minvetconsult.com. It's just, and the other thing that's on my website, in addition to my books, is a free, what I call a, it's not really a newsletter, I call it a work in progress. It's called Dog Breath. Okay, Dog Breath, if you sign up, I will start sending you some information, because as I learn new things and I have products that I like, I share those with anybody that wants the information. It's kind of like a blog. I have a blog with articles that I write. Some of my articles have been published. So I just put up a new article every couple of weeks, and it's information that I think is really important. I don't just write stuff to write stuff. I write things that will change some dog's life.
Yeah.
And I like reaching as many dog owners as I can. So people can get Dog Breath. That's what it is. You'll get my blog. You'll read articles. It's free. Got nothing to lose.
No, absolutely.
The dog has everything to gain.
Yeah, yeah.
So go to Paula's website and you too could get Dog Breath. She has a lot of sound advice and you could have it delivered right to your computer. You can hear our interview with Paula about vaccinating your dog in episode 59. And we'll be hearing some more from her in a future episode. If you'd like to see a photo of Taz, who belongs to Lucy, who emailed in for help, go to the Dogcast Radio site. Let's hope she's soon eating and feeling well. Yesterday, I was a dog. Today, I'm a dog. Tomorrow, I'll probably still be a dog. There's so little hope for advancement.
You're listening to Dogcast Radio, on www.dogcastradio.com.
Hello and welcome to the Dogcast Radio News Desk. I'm Kate.
And I'm Nick. The website Dogs in Danger is taking a new approach to the problem of dogs stuck in shelters. The site displays dogs along with the number of days left until they're euthanized. A number of shelters have given the site information about their dogs in a desperate effort to save these dogs from an unnecessary death. The hope is that when visitors see a photo of a dog whose time is running out, they will be motivated to adopt him. And it's a policy that seems to be paying off, as many of the shelters involved have managed to vastly decrease the amount of healthy animals put to sleep.
Dogs in Danger is a non-profit organisation that aims to put an end to any killing of healthy dogs. Visitors to the site can search for a rescue dog by breed and location within America. Anything that helps dogs find new homes is good news. And there's good news for dogs and owners in Australia, as more pregnant women are seeking advice on how to help their dogs welcome the new baby. The RSPCA has been giving out such tips as taking an empty pram along on walks and changing dogs' sleeping habits so that when the baby finally comes home, it is less of a change of routine for the dogs. The arrival of a baby can often be a trigger for the dog finding himself in rescue, but preparation can help the process go smoothly. Apparently there are even courses on offer to help very young children behave appropriately around the family dog, so the whole family can enjoy their dog and the dog is in no danger of losing his home.
And on the subject of children, Australian dogs are benefiting from technology developed for children. Vets at Murdoch University Hospital can now practice a difficult surgical procedure required by dogs with serious leg bone problems, thanks to help from the Princess Margaret Hospital. The doctors, more used to working on children, can use scans and x-rays to create 3D models of dogs for vets to perfect their techniques on. In some cases, a virtual model on a computer screen can give vets further insight. The surgery enables dogs with severe mobility impairments to finally walk properly and has so far helped two dogs, both Shih Tzus.
There was good news recently for two dogs who've had narrow escapes. The first was in Kentucky, USA, where a coon hound named Homer was trapped in a cave for several days. Although he was wearing a GPS device on his collar, it was too dangerous for rescuers to get near enough to him. Luckily, Homer managed to find his own way out of the cave and was finally reunited with his owner.
Meanwhile, in Plymouth in the UK, another canine was having problems of his own when he got his head stuck between the legs of a stool. This dog was unable to free himself, but thankfully, a visit from a fire crew with some cutting equipment saw him liberated. It just goes to show, whether you're out and about or in the house, your dog can always find ways of getting into trouble.
And that's all from the Dogcast Radio News Desk. Goodbye.
Why can't we get all the people together in the world that we really like and then just stay together? I guess that wouldn't work. Someone would leave. Someone always leaves, and then we have to say goodbye. I hate goodbyes. I know what I need. I need more hellos. Pam Dennison was already an experienced dog trainer when she met Shadow, a border collie with many, many problems. She wrote the book Bringing Light to Shadow, A Dog Trainer's Diary, about their journey together. The first question I put to her was just how did Shadow come into her life?
Oh, by accident. I was looking to add another dog to my household. And there, I don't know if there still is, but there used to be a list on the internet. And it was basically adopting a dog for agility. And since I always adopt all my dogs, I thought that might be a good place to look for another dog. And I saw a picture of this one dog, and I remember thinking to myself, wow, he looks just like Bo, my other border collie. And that kind of started the whole process of, getting this dog. And that's sort of how it started. And then I talked to the rescue group, and I kind of hemmed and hawed for about a month or so and not really sure. And supposedly he had some issues. And I again, hemmed and hawed and hemmed and hawed. And then I felt kind of guilty about not pursuing it. And then I figured, well, fine, I'll just go up and meet him. Yeah, right. Famous last word. I'm just going to go look at the dog.
Yeah, yeah. And how much information about, you know, the issues that he have? How much information did you have at that point?
Well, I had some. However, the rescue group who shall remain nameless, and the only reason why I'm remaining them nameless is because the person that was in charge is no longer in charge, and it's not the same group as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
They're much better now, obviously. They sort of told me some of his issues, and they just blamed it on his previous owner, saying that he would be fine as soon as they got him away from his owner.
Mm.
And I was very cocky back then, figuring that I can fix this dog. Which actually is true. I was able to fix, well, not totally fix, but, you know, make him a whole lot better. But, you know, it's been 7 years in the making.
Yeah, yeah. So you went along just to have a look at him, not knowing his you know, all his problems. And how did you feel then?
Again, I was kind of like, okay, I drove, you know, 4.5 hours to see him. And I, at the last minute, I threw an extra crate in the van. And so, you know, guess what? He came home. I didn't know how to say no.
Mm.
So I brought him home.
Yeah. And what was his reaction to you?
He was actually, I'll tell you, I was knowing exactly how he actually is, it was pretty amazing that he didn't bite me.
Mm.
You know, the first on the first meeting. I mean, it was pretty amazing that he actually didn't bite me.
Yeah.
And then, you know, within 2 weeks, I finally figured him out and what the issues were, and I was going to return him.
Mm.
And I called a rescue group. I remember the phone call vividly. And I said, listen, this is not what, you know, this is not what you told me. This is not what I signed up for. I don't know how to work with a dog like this. I'm bringing him back on Monday.
Yeah.
And they were like, sure, no problem. Not every dog is good for every household, yada, yada, yada. And this local woman here was having a sort of aggressive dog seminar, a three-day seminar kind of thing. That weekend. So I took him to that. I called her up and I said, listen, I know it's the last minute. I said, can you fit me in? She said, sure, come on down. So I did, and obviously I did not end up returning him.
Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, even for you, this was a challenge.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the what were the depths of his, you know, of his problem?
Well, he would, you know, very simply bite people.
Mm.
You know, he would bite people if they got too close. He would bite people if they stayed away.
Yeah.
He would, you know, go after people and nip them.
Good grief.
And, you know, looking back, I don't know how. I mean, you know, he certainly, I mean, he only drew blood once, but he doesn't give any warning signs.
Gosh.
Because, yeah, he gives no warning signs, no growl. No, nothing. He's just, you know, fine 1 second, and the next second he's going for your face.
Mm.
You know, he's not an ankle biter, he's not a butt biter, he's not a hand biter. He goes right for your face.
Gosh.
And there are certain things that trigger him. Anybody leaning over, either leaning over him or even just leaning over to pick something up off the ground.
Mm.
And you can be close, you can be far away, it doesn't matter. Any leaning over movement will set him to attack.
Yeah. Is that still, Pam, or was that just then?
No, it's still. It's
Gosh.
Certainly much better.
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly much, much, much better. I taught him an alternate behavior to that. I taught him that if somebody leans over, it means to back up and lie down.
Yeah, yeah.
But he's not 100% reliable with it. You know, no dog is. I mean, heck, we're not 100% reliable with our behavior.
Yeah. When you have a dog that, you know, is that unreliable and is that, whatever the term, you know, whether you're going to say aggressive or whatever it is.
Right.
How did you start to rehabilitate him?
Well, what I did with him and what I do with all the dogs that I now work with, because now, of course, I work with a lot of aggressive dogs, is we start with foundation behaviors. And it was easy for me to do or want to do because I'm a big fan of competition obedience, and I got him to compete.
Mm.
Okay? And so, you know, I like doing, you know, working on the eye contact and name response and come response and working on really good recalls and work on healing and sitting down and stay and, you know, those kinds of things. And so that's, you know, that's what you start with. You start really building a foundation, not only of behaviors, but a foundation of trust between the dog and the handler. And that's what I started doing with him. And then, of course, you know, he wasn't as, I mean, he was brilliant. He still is brilliant. You know, learning new things, it was just, you know, we had to build a lot stronger before I could actually compete with him or do anything with him.
Yeah. How did he, I mean, we can only surmise that he had an unhappy life before he came to live with you, and that he wasn't happy, presumably, doing these behaviours. So did
yeah,
you begin?
He started becoming aggressive when he was from the previous owner. Unfortunately, I don't have her notes anymore. They were on my computer years ago, and my computer crashed, so I lost those.
Oh, dear.
Unfortunately, I don't have those anymore. But I do remember bits and pieces of it, that he did start aggressing at 6 months of age. And I got him when he 2 weeks after his first birthday.
Yeah, yeah. So he wasn't mistreated in any way. He just had this aggressive...
You know, I don't know. First of all, he was from a puppy mill.
Ah, yeah.
So, you know, right away, you know, that's like five strikes against him.
Yeah, yeah.
And... you know, whatever his owners could do wrong in teaching the dog stuff is what they did wrong.
Mm.
You know, instead of teaching the dog to willingly trade for things, they would just rip it out of his mouth. And, you know, whatever they could do wrong, they did wrong.
Yeah.
And, you know, punished for growling. And, you know, that's why he gives no warning.
Yeah.
Is because he was punished for one, because he gives great signals to other dogs. He knows his own language.
Yeah.
But it is totally suppressed when it comes to people.
Mm.
You know, he learned very early, never give signals to people. Just fight them.
Yeah. Because I guess that works, doesn't it? From his point of view.
It absolutely works. Yep, punish a dog for growling, and you will get a dog that absolutely doesn't growl, but goes directly to biting. And he's like a real poker face.
Yeah.
And it took me a while to figure out, to be able to read him, to know when he was about to bite.
Yeah.
And his eyes changed shape and his pupils got really big.
Mm.
And that was my only sign. And it happened really fast.
Yes, of course.
You know, he'd stiffen for like a split second. His eyes would go like saucers. And his pupils would get really big, and then you can pretty much expect a bite.
Yeah, yeah. And so you taught him different behaviours, though, as you said. You taught him to sort of back away rather than going for that bite.
Exactly. And I think this is part of what I remember, too. The property that he was on backed up to an apple orchard, you know, public place.
Mm.
And... He and his litter mate were left out a lot.
Mm.
And I think because of the people bending over, because bending over is such an issue with him and picking something up, I think people were throwing like rocks and apples and things at the dog.
Because
people are sick and they think that's funny.
Yeah.
And so I think just based on his behavior with certain body postures of people, Mm. I think that's probably where that happened.
Yeah. So he's come to live with you. You've begun to teach him these, you know, these different behaviors, these alternatives, these strategies to deal with things.
Right.
So then, did he start succeeding with the agility and the obedience that you wanted to do with him?
Oh, very much. Oh, he's absolutely brilliant.
Mm.
And this dog is absolutely brilliant. And he knows, I mean, the hardest behavior, there are two behaviors that I taught him that were very, very hard. One was actually a pet trick where he lays on a towel and I give him a signal and he picks up the towel or the blanket and rolls over and covers himself.
Mm.
But out of all my dogs, he actually learned that first.
Mm.
But that was really tough. And, you know, a couple other, like, stupid trick behaviors that were really hard. But other than that, he's brilliant. He gets everything so fast.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I work very, very hard with him. And, you know, also getting him used to touch because I couldn't groom him in the beginning.
Mm.
You know, he'd let me brush, like, his shoulders and his chest and a little bit along his back. But then as soon as I got towards his hind end or his tail, he was not happy.
Yeah.
So I set my then husband up with a huge bucket of food, and I said, just feed him. Just shovel food, shovel, 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 and while I brush his tail. So that's kind of what I had to do.
Yeah.
And then I figured, you know, that's ridiculous. Let me just train the dog to stand still and stand straight while I brush his butt.
Mm.
And it's a good thing I happened to do it when I did, because then I divorced my husband and then I would have had nobody to help me. So it's a good thing I did it when I did.
And if you, I mean, let's look at it another way. If you hadn't trained the dog to do that, you couldn't have divorced the husband.
Oh, no, that would have been terrible.
You'd have had to keep him.
I know. That would have been awful.
Oh, dear.
And he's not ever going to hear this, so we don't have to worry about it.
No. Oh. So what's Shadow's life like now, then? And what's his relationship with you like now?
Well, he has his CGC, which is Canine Good Citizen.
Hmm.
It's a certificate offered by the American Kennel Club, and that was the first title that he got.
Yeah.
And part of what was so important for me to do that was also, you know, because I am cocky, and I needed to prove a point. And I thought it was also a good stepping stone for anything else that I wanted to do with him, because part of the test is that the tester comes up and pets your dog.
Mm-hmm.
And approaches your dog, you know, pets your dog on the head, examines ears, and both front feet.
Yeah. Which is going to
be... Okay, so think about it. So leaning over, touching, this is like, oh my God.
Yeah.
So it took 18 months to train him to get it, and it was almost 18 months to the day that I had picked him up, and he got his CGC. And I specifically picked a tester that was afraid of him.
Mm.
You know, that knew him, knew his issues, was terrified of him. Because I thought that would be a really good test.
Because he would sense that.
Well, not that necessarily that he would sense it, but I just, you know, I just thought that that was a real honest test.
Yes, yeah.
And now, of course, the two of them are absolute best friends.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, it wasn't always like that.
No.
It wasn't always like that.
Yeah.
And so I got his CGC, and then I started competing in agility. And then we started competing in rally obedience, APDT rally. And we got his level 1, 2 titles. We got his ARCH title, which is a rally championship title. Then we got his level 3, and he just recently finished up his Arch X, which is championship excellence.
Mm.
And in between there, he also got his CD title,
yeah,
which includes a Stanford exam,
mm,
where, you know, you tell the dog to stay, and you walk out 6 feet, and the judge comes over, reaches over,
mm,
touches your dog, and then walks away.
Wow.
And they have to do that 3 times.
Yeah.
And he actually got really good scores, and he got placements on every one. He got 2 second places and a 3rd place, and, you know, but very high scores, and, you know, missed 1st place by 0.5 points.
Yeah. Wow, you know, that's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you know, he's been doing really well, and he has a couple agility titles. He has novice jumpers and novice standard, and he's got a few legs of open standard.
Yeah.
And then I just haven't been doing much agility with them lately because, you know, one can only have so much money for entry fees.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, the amazing thing is the life and the success and the experiences this dog has had with you.
Yeah.
I would imagine with anybody else, he would have been dead by now, wouldn't he? He would have been put down.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I didn't give him back.
Mm.
Because they would not have been able to adopt him out to anybody else.
No.
And they would have put him down.
Yeah.
They would have put him down.
Yeah.
So I couldn't do that. But yeah, no, he's very busy. And he is not in my pet classes. He's not a demo dog in my pet classes.
Mm.
But he is my main demo dog and neutral dog for my aggressive dog classes and seminars.
Yeah.
And he's actually very, very, very funny. He knows when people are watching him. And he knows when he's being the demo dog, because what he'll do is I'll be in the middle of doing a demo, and all of a sudden he'll race up, probably scare the heck out of these people, but he'll race up and go right down the line, jump in their lap, you may pet me, and then he jumps off, and he goes to the next person in line. He goes all the way down the line.
Oh.
You may pet me, you may pet me, you may pet me. Then he runs and grabs a toy, and then he goes to the first person, he drops the toy, and he does his get back out and lie down on his own, waiting for them to throw the toy, and he goes through the line again. It is complete, and you know what? I let him do it.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it is such normal dog behavior.
Yes.
That I allow him to do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's certainly rude. Just jump in people's laps.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't allow my other dogs to do that, my normal dog. But it is such normal behavior that I allow him to do
Yeah,
it.
Yeah. But that shows such trust, doesn't it? You know, that he that he wants them to pet him, he wants them to play with him. He trusts them, doesn't he?
I think he trusts me.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if he trusts them per se.
Mm.
But I also think, and I know this may sound hokey, but I think that maybe they're thinking, wow, this dog's really brilliant, and look how far he's come. Because most of the people that come to my seminars have read his book and read his story.
Mm.
And so they're sending out those, like, wow, you're wonderful, Shadow vibes.
Mm.
And dogs pick up on that. They know.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, the more I work with dogs, not just my own dogs, but my students' dogs, the more I know they do pick up on your thoughts, and they do read your thoughts. And I think that's kind of why he does it. Yeah, I'm really great. You can do it too.
Mm.
And I know I might be anthropomorphizing, but I think he really does sense. That's why I don't use him for my pet classes. Because also, you know, I don't want to warn people, you know, he may bite, don't do this, don't do that. Whereas the aggressive dog students, they already know his story. They know he bites. You know, they know the potential is always there. You know, these dogs are never 100% cured.
No, no.
You know, they can become a whole lot better, but they're never cured. You know, the potential to bite is always there.
Yeah. I was talking to another trainer who specializes in aggression, and she was saying, you know, it's almost like alcoholism. You know, you can
Absolutely.
Manage it. Yeah, you can manage it, and you can sort of, you know, that behavior may not manifest, but it's always managed. It's never cured.
That's right. Well, that's why his book is called Bringing Light to Shadow, Story of a Recovering Aggressive Dog. Not recovered.
Yes.
But recovering.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, yeah, it's the propensity is always there.
Yeah.
Always there. But, you know, I mean, there are certain situations, yeah, well, I always have to manage him.
Yes.
And then other situations that I don't have to manage him anymore.
Yeah.
And, you know, he still, after 7 years, he still surprises me sometimes, in a good way.
Yeah.
We were on the trail in the spring, and I had him and my other dogs off lead on the trail. And I always carry leashes with me, because you know, we're supposed to have our dogs on lead. So I either have leash dragging or I'll just hold the leashes, in my hand and, you know, put them back on if I see somebody coming. Well, some guy came from behind me. Bicycle riders in particular, at least in this country, are extremely rude. They don't let people know that they're coming.
Yeah.
And I didn't hear him.
Mm.
He was going fast.
Mm.
And he just passed right by, almost hit Shadow, and Shadow didn't do anything. He just sort of moved over. Oh, okay.
Oh.
And so he still continually surprises me in a good way, where he's like better than I think he is.
Yes, yeah.
Which is pretty cool.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And I had surgery a couple of years ago, and I'm here by myself, and I couldn't move real fast. You know, I was moving very, very, very slowly, like slower than slow motion.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting at my computer. It was one of the first days I could actually sit up. So I'm sitting in front of my computer, checking my email. All of a sudden, I hear the front door open. And I'm like, who is that? So I just said, you know, because there wasn't anything I could do about it at that point. So I said, whoever you are, I hope you know Shadow. And, you know, it took me, I mean, you know, it's only maybe... It, you know, I don't know, 30 feet, if that, not even 30 feet from my office to my front door. And it probably took me a good 2-3 minutes to get there. And it was actually my neighbor.
Yeah.
Bringing me my mail. Now, Shadow doesn't know her. She knows about Shadow. Why she did that, I don't know. But she just walked in, and Shadow didn't do anything. He jumped on her, hi, hi, hi.
Oh.
And then he just sat down. It was like, wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, at that point, I didn't just let him stay out. I just said, you know, Judas, just wait a second. Let me put Shadow away. And I just hobbled back to the bedroom and put him away and then came back out because I didn't want to push my luck.
No.
So, you know, but he's always surprising me in good ways like that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
And
so it's never ending.
No. And what do you want his future to be?
Well, what I would like, and I've actually stopped, I had stopped for a while working on desensitization sessions with him and just using him as a neutral dog in my regular aggressive dog classes. And I'd actually like to get a little bit, I'm going to start getting back into that. And I'd like to have more people be able to come over my house without managing him. You know, if something happens to me or if I need to go away, I need to be able to have a larger group of friends that can come over and take care of my dogs if I need to.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that's actually my next goal. Is to work. I have a neighbor who said that he'd be willing to become a friend of Shadow. And I'm also going to work with him and also with some of my other students. And I really want to work with more of the bending over kind of thing. I haven't done that in a while. And I was practicing scent articles, and I asked some of my students, I said, do me a favor, could you just put these out for me? And he ran over and nipped them. I mean, it happened so fast. I wasn't expecting it.
No.
And so I would like, and he just a tiny little nip, you know, he didn't even get anywhere near their skin. He just kind of nipped their clothes a little bit.
Yeah.
And, but it was so unexpected after all these years. And so I would like to get back into that and start working with that. So I want to increase his circle of safe people. So that's my next goal. for him. I don't know if I'm going to do any more competition obedience with him. Certainly more rally and possibly more agility. And more pet tricks.
Yes. Well, the best of luck with him.
Well, thank you very much.
It sounds like Shadow found the perfect person to help him in Pam, and I do wish them very well together. If you want to find out more about Pam or her book that tells Shadow's remarkable story, we have links on the Dogcast Radio site. My life has no purpose, no direction, no aim, no meaning, and yet I'm happy. I can't figure it out. What am I doing right? Now, author Bernard Cartwright reads an extract from his book, The Knock Nobbler, which tells of his experiences as a dog catcher in Worcester in the UK. This extract takes us back to the year 2000.
It's the first week of the new millennium. I'd walked out at lunchtime from my Farrier House office and was walking across the Crown Gate bus station when a bus driver approached me saying, "Hello, can I have a quiet word?" "Yes, of course. What's the problem?" He ventured, "Well, it's about this woman, or should I say her dog. On my outward route, she gets on with her son, who is usually carrying this Jack Russell. Then she allows the dog to mess on the bus. A bus is not a mobile public convenience, you know. Can you do anything about it, because she's a surly cow?" "Report it to your bosses," I said, "and get them to stop it." "Oh, no, I can't, you see, because I shouldn't let it happen in the first place. And anyway, all my mates would make a monkey out of me." Trying to be helpful, I said, "I can offer you a poo kit." "Is that all you can do?" he asks in a subdued way. "Look, I have to clean it up with newspapers afterwards and swill it down with tea from my flask. You must be able to do summat." "I'm sorry, sir, it's a private matter concerning a private bus company, and it has to be dealt with privately." The driver, Mr. Piswary Shanood, started to get irate. "You mean, if someone was murdered on the bus, the police would say, 'Oh, this is a private murder, there's nothing we can do about it. It's an offence, and all I want you to do is to catch him at it. What do we pay our rates for?'" Before walking off, I reiterated my position, adding, "You could put some pepper on the floor of the bus, or some ammonia." Later on, I had a call from Miss Monica Amblecote, a polite, nervous young lady. She rang from Blackpool, which is a suburb of Worcester, with a disturbing report, somewhat rare in the annals of Worcester canine peccadilloes. A large, black, hairy dog would sit on the pavement all day for hours and hours and do nothing except stare at a house. Just that. During the week, I made several visits to the property and witnessed this phenomenon for myself. I was never able to catch the dog or follow it home, yet it always returned to sit motionless and gaze at this specific property, spooking the lady resident something terrible. There was no bitch in the locality for our suspected Romeo, and apparently no previous occupier owned a dog. And all I could do, really, was routinely chase the dog away for her. Dogs certainly have a sixth sense, and I wondered if it was something to do with a death in the house. But I didn't want to put that question to a nervous Miss Amblecote. If a dog has an owner, like, say, a farmer who works outdoors and happens to die outside, the dog, if it accompanied the owner at his death, may return to the very same spot to lie down and die itself when its time comes. As happened at a farm in Balebroughton, Worcestershire. Emily Bronte's faithful dog keeper, which was half bulldog and half mastiff, after he attended Emily's funeral, maintained a vigil outside the door of his dead mistress's room, whining every morning until he too died. Over the months, my doggy visits to Blackpool became rarer and rarer, and I never did get to the bottom of it. Creepy, but large black dogs are the ones which are ominously prevalent in ghost literature, such as the Jytrash in Jane Eyre. Dogs are always removed from a house during the rite of exorcism.
Sometimes I lie awake at night and I ask, where have I gone wrong? Then a voice says to me, this is going to take more than one night. Here's Jodie Wright to tell you about her book, which contains some of her stunning artwork.
Psst, come closer. Listen carefully. The thing about secrets that makes them simply irresistible is that they are hidden treasures just beyond the surface. When I wrote 50 Secrets Humans Should Know, I found I was on a voyage of discovery that had started as a toddler with my first puppy. Each step I took in learning to walk was a step with a loyal companion animal into the realm of spirit. Today, I'm left wondering whether the great secrets in our lives are revealed from the work of great geniuses or revolutionary rocket scientists, or from the unconditional love of a wagging tail, the lick of a wet tongue, and the constant reassurance of a four-legged friend. Perhaps these creatures hold secrets available to anyone who wants to take a closer look inward, which of course is no secret to those who have shared their lives with a companion animal. In the pages of this book, you'll get to experience the secrets these beautiful creatures have shared through their play, actions, soulful looks, and in-the-moment living. May their spirits always whisper their sweet secrets to you as well. I'm Jodie Wright, and I have written the book 50 Secrets Humans Should Know. I'm very excited to be able to combine my paintings on canvas with wonderful life lessons dogs have taught me over the years. I think we humans would do well to follow the ways of our furry friends. Love boldly, embrace surprise, be loyal, watch for opportunity, and just say yes, all while never missing the chance to feel the grass between our toes.
There's a gorgeous example of Jodie's work on the Dogcast Radio site, a painting called Iris Garden, and I love her sentiments. Now, here's a song that's especially for you.
My dog has fleas.
My dog has fleas. My dog has fleas.
I heard him on the yard. There he was working way too hard. Saw him smiling with his back against the tree. He said the bark works better than the bite for me. He don't let nothing get under his skin. Okay by me if it's okay by him.
My dog is free.
That's from the album Dog People by Freebo. On his website, Freebo says, ever since I was a young boy, I have loved dogs, really loved dogs. For some reason, they've always made me feel better. Maybe it was the joy they seemed to have when I didn't, or the constant love they were so free to give. I have come to believe that this unconditional love, acceptance of the moment, and joyful giving are qualities that we humans could do well to adopt. All of the songs on this CD express the love between our canine friends and their people. It is the essence of this connection that I wish to honour on this record, a friendship between man and beast that often goes beyond human friendship, a friendship that is as old as mankind itself. I therefore dedicate this CD to every dog, past and present, who has helped to make a better life for its people. To finish the show, there's a little of another of Freebo's songs, More Like You. Till next time, look after yourselves and and your dogs.
Soft and tender, tough as steel, here and now you know what's real. No one tells you how to feel. You lie there so peacefully, loving unconditionally. I wish I was less like me. What can I do to be more like you? When I get in my way, what would you say to get me through? Days like these I know I need.
Thanks for listening to Dogcast Radio, available from www.dogcastradio.com. That's dogcastradio.com. If you'd like to get in touch with us, and wherever you are in the world, we'd love to hear from you. You can do so in a variety of ways. By phone from the UK, you can contact us on 0121-288-0922. From the US, you can contact us on our American number, which is 315-849-2022. From any other country, you'll need your international exit code and then 44121-288-0922. You can contact us on Skype with the ident Dogcast Radio. That's all one word, Dogcast Radio. By email, you can contact me on julie@dogcastradio.com. When contacting us by email, if you have the facilities, please record your questions or comments and send them to us as an audio file. That way we can include them directly in our programme. We can accept most formats, for example, WAV, MP3. All these methods of contacting us can be found on our website, which is www.dogcastradio.com. And as ever, the final word goes to Jenny.
What dog has the worst sight? A cockeyed spaniel.